And welcome to another edition of Book Talk. I'm Linda Lloyd, and it's my pleasure to welcome R.J. Lee, the author of Grand Slam Murders, the first in a new A Bridge to Death mystery series. The book is published by Kensington Books. Set in Rosalie, Mississippi, four of the town's most prominent ladies die from cyanide poisoning during a bridge game. It seems the Grand Slam hand of bridge they were preparing to play ends before it even started. Where did you start? What was your first genre?
It was small town, cozy, southern humorous fiction. I don't know if I just made that up, but it was definitely cozy fiction, series fiction, with a small town south as the focus of it. Plus, it was geared to appeal to women. I was signed by an agency in New York, the Jane Wrote Rosen Agency, that likes writers across the genres that can write for women, because the statistics tell us that women are the larger reader group in the country. They read more than men do. They buy more books from bookstores than men do, and they check out more books in the library than men do. So if you can write for women, that's a step up as far as New York is concerned. And I enjoy having strong female characters in my writing anyway.
Well, there are definitely four very strong female characters that end up dead at the end of this one, which is interesting in itself. How did these ladies, the Gin Girls, get started together, and why is everybody so enchanted with them, I guess, in the town?
Well, you know, I have to be fair with my readers and anyone else who's listening and tell you that since I was born in Natchez, it was the ideal writer's laboratory. The Gin Girls are not supposed to be any one specific that I observed in Natchez, which, by the way, is called Rosalie in Grand Slam Murders. It's a tweaked version of Natchez, but these women do exist in some form or other, wealthy widows, privileged, maybe white privileged even, and they amuse themselves by playing bridge and belonging to all the social garden clubs. And they became a legend in Rosalie because at a very early age, and by this I mean teenagers, they got involved with drinking. And that is not a stretch in this town of Rosalie, which is Natchez. Natchez has always been a wide open river town, party town, laid back. Natchez Under the Hill was for many, many decades just about as wild as the Wild Wild West. And so you grew up in Natchez believing that a party was certainly not complete without some spirits of some sort. And generally, you were aware of wine and alcohol at a very early age. And these particular four women who came from very privileged families got involved with gin at a very early age. Their parents were out of town and they were doing a sleepover. And the four of them as teenagers got into the liquor cabinet, and the first thing that they pulled out was a fifth of Gilby's gin, and they tried drinking it, and of course they got sick, but then that made them more challenged. They said, we're going to conquer this gin. This is in the backstory of the novel, and they decided that they were going to conquer gin and call themselves the Gin Girls. And because they were so privileged and so beautiful and from the group of families in Rosalie that would get all this kind of publicity just for walking down the street, the town of Rosalie fell in love with them. Where are they going to college? Who are they dating? Who are they getting married to? Are they pregnant? They were kind of small town celebrities. And they formed this exclusive gin club, the Rosalie Bridge Club. Did I say gin club?
Well, but it was sort of like that, so it made sense in a lot of ways.
And they always had their cocktails. So actually, that wasn't a faux pas. At these games that they played, they had several drinks. Gin, maybe a Bloody Mary made with gin or something else. But one of them says in the first chapter when they are getting ready to play a bridge game, I don't think we've ever played bridge sober, have we? That's how they got started, and the whole town knew about them. When the four of them chose to go off to Ole Miss, why that was the ideal pairing. I mean, imagine four girls who like to drink going to a college like Ole Miss. Why, that's not a stretch, is it?
Not at all. And they made the most of it.
They
did. Mean, they were not necessarily the nicest people in town.
No.
So they all had enemies.
They did. One of the things that the leader of these gin girls, Liddy Langston Rose, intended to do when she formed the club was to expand it and invite other people than her three girlfriends. But when it came down to it, every single time someone was proposed for membership, she turned them down because she felt it would dilute their power and their exclusivity. And so she made a lot of enemies who felt that they were worthy of belonging to this bridge club, but they were just given specious reasons for not being able to join. So socially, Liddy Langston Rose and her girlfriends, the other gin girls, did make some enemies because they put themselves above everything else in the town.
Well, and even to the local restaurateur who's just trying to make a living, you know, that's one of the suspects because she finally had enough because Liddy had written this terrible letter to the local editor. Why was she so mean to everybody else?
It was her way of controlling everybody. And because she felt genetically, and this is mentioned, that her family background was superior to everyone else's in Rosalie, that she could call the shots. And you are referring to Selena Chalk, the owner of the Bluff City Bistro in Rosalie, who was victimized by a letter that all four of the gin girls signed and was published in the local newspaper that the service, the bistro was awful, food was spilled on them, their orders came back wrong. And that caused the business of the restaurant to start to slide. In one of the early chapters, you learn that Selena Chalk does go to Liddy Rose's house and demand that she print a retraction. And they even came to blows almost. And the witness to that was Liddy's longtime cook and housekeeper, Merlise Maxique.
I wondered about the pronunciation of the last name, so I'm glad you said Maxique because I had it envisioned in different ways.
Right, right.
I was curious why Merlise put up with her for so long, because no matter what she did, Liddy just picked, and they had been together for over 20 years.
Right.
It was almost like she inherited her from her parents because they had been around so long.
That's right. Well, Merlise is someone that I created who is a domestic worker. She does not enjoy the privilege that the gin girls and other people in Rosalie have enjoyed over the years. She is black. She's hardworking. She identifies herself as a church-going woman. And my answer to you as to why she would put up with Liddy is that she needed the money. And she also has a wayward son, Hiram, who is kind of a bad boy. He's not even living in Rosalie when the novel opens. He's up in Chicago somewhere, up to no good. And the rumor is that Merlise is sending him money because he gets into all sorts of trouble. So Merlise's reason for working that hard and putting up with Liddy all those years is that that's the way she is able to survive.
And she might not be able to find that in other areas,
right,
which, you know, you would be fearful of in a small town like that.
Right, right.
How big is Rosalie? Because, I mean, it has its own brewery. I mean, that was pretty incredible.
It is. Well, that's a fact. Since it is modeled after Natchez, my hometown, with some modifications, Natchez is the only city in the country of its size that actually has a beer brewery, a rum distillery, and a winery. And that is pretty incredible, but it's so like Natchez to be a place that alcohol manufacturers flock to because I don't know what the per capita is there. But you might also, and I didn't bring this up in the novel, I didn't say Rosalie had this, but Natchez has a go cup ordinance where you can walk around the downtown district, much like you can in the French Quarter, with a go cup. And it's actually marked when you get beyond a certain street, suddenly it becomes illegal. But most of the downtown area is covered by this go cup ordinance. And so it does make sense that Natchez and Rosalie would be able to have a rum distillery, a winery, and a brewery at the same time, and they're all doing well.
Now, finally, one of the people that they invite to be in the club, besides Liddy's daughter Stella, right, is the local society columnist, Wendy Winchester.
Right.
Why do you think they invited her? Was it for better publicity?
Well, there have been occasions that someone has been missing from one of the bridge games. Maybe they've gone out of town or gotten sick and they needed an alternate. But Stella Rose Markham, Liddy's daughter, is already an alternate. And I can't really answer your question completely, but I can tell you that Wendy Winchester, who, by the way, we haven't gotten to yet, and she's the heroine of the piece, Wendy Winchester is viewed as another alternate. And she's invited to learn bridge by watching. And Wendy herself wants to learn bridge and become very good at it. And I am a bridge player myself. I was fortunate enough to have my parents teach me in high school. Then in college, in the dorm, I found three guys that like to play as much as I do. And we played for years in the dorm common room. But let me tell you something. This is, an interesting aside. All three of those guys were named Steve.
Wow.
It was one Rob and three Steves. And do you know that if you tried to use that in fiction, your agent or your editor would say to you, that's unbelievable. People won't believe that. That's incredible. That would never happen. But it did. And the bottom line to that is that truth really is stranger than fiction.
Now, you use a lot of alliterative names, I've noticed. Wendy Winchester, who's the society columnist, who, like you said, is, you know, the sleuth that kind of solves everything, plus her boyfriend, Ross Ryerson.
Ryerson.
Oh, Ryerson. See, yes. I mispronounced it.
That's
Merlise Maxeek.
Yes.
So why the alliteration?
It was unconscious.
Okay.
I promise you, it was. Winchester, however, is a family name on my mother's side. I guess consciously I did think about what her first name be. And maybe I did do some alliterative work there with Wendy. I promise you, though, I really wasn't trying to with the others. And you're right. I have those three that are alliterative, but the others are not. So it's interesting. You've kind of challenged me there. Maybe I was doing that unconsciously to make it trip off the tongue.
Well, and it does. I mean, I thought it was kind of cool that it was like that, but I didn't realize if it was, you know, intended or not.
I think one was consciously and the others probably weren't, but I played a little around. Maxeek is not an actual name in Rosalie, but Mazique is, M-A-Z-I-Q-U-E.
Okay.
There's an actual family there by that name.
And see, Merlise was a name that I was not familiar with at all.
Made that up out of whole cloth.
Okay. I didn't know if that was a Southern name because we do have so many unusual names.
We do. We do. And I have a great friend in Natchez who has a very original Southern name, and it's Elodie, E-L-O-D-I-E. Very original, and I've always liked it because it reminds me of song.
Right.
Rhyming with melody, you know?
Yeah. Well, back to Wendy Winchester.
Yes, back to Wendy, please.
Exactly. She decides not to stay in Mississippi to go school. Her dad is the chief of police.
Right.
And would love for her to get into his line of work because she seems like she has a knack for that.
Just a knack for puzzles.
She likes to puzzle out things.
Mm-hmm.
Why did she not stay in Mississippi? Why did she pick someplace else to go after school? And did that give her an advantage in coming back to this small town?
I think it did because at some point in her life, and part of her backstory in the novel is that she and her father lost her mother when she was 15. It was a fatal bout of pneumonia. It just happened very quickly. After that happened, I think Wendy began to think about her future and what she really wanted, and she decided that she wanted to be a writer. And she asks her father, who's nicknamed Bax, Baxter Winchester, but we call him Bax in the novel, if she wanted to be a writer, where should she go and what should she do? And her father is able to unearth the fact that she would rather be a journalist than a fiction writer. She would rather solve puzzles, maybe be an investigative reporter. And Bax tells her, well, a great school for journalism is the University of Missouri, which is a fact. And it was suggested to me when I was in high school, too. So she decides that she wants to go there, and she's got an independent spirit. She's quite spunky. So she goes to Missouri. She gets a good degree, and then she comes back home to test the waters to see what's going to happen. There's an opening at the newspaper, but it's not for an investigative journalist. It's for the society columnist. And she takes it to get her foot in the door, even though she realizes that that's a risk because her editor, Dalton Hemmings, is a crusty old guy that's been there for like 30 or 40 years. And he's pretty much a sexist in that he believes men should write men's stories and women should write women's stories, whatever that means. So she gets stuck for 3 years writing up weddings, sipping seas and baby showers, and she is bored to death, and she doesn't feel like she's using her journalism degree. Actually, when these murders happen, she goes to her editor and proposes that she be allowed to do a feature on the Gin Girls. I don't believe we've said what happens to them. They are simultaneously poisoned at a bridge luncheon, and it is discovered that someone has put potassium cyanide in the sugar bowl that is used for their coffee. So they go down, all four of them, quickly together. And although she feels bad for these ladies, Wendy sees this as an opportunity to maybe show the editor that she should do more. If I can give life to the story of these four ladies, and behind the scenes she's actually hoping to solve the murders, then maybe I can use my journalism degree to better effect.
Well, and the prime suspect is the housekeeper, Merlise, and she and Wendy have developed a relationship which goes a little bit deeper than just Wendy showing up and playing bridge. They had actually gotten to be friends, and so Wendy really wants to clear her. But there's also the yard guy who I didn't like. I don't know why.
Not supposed to like him.
I didn't like him, so I guess that's good. So you've got those two as suspects, but you don't really know which lady has been murdered or why are all these other people. Did you always know who the murderer was going to be?
Oh, yes. I can't tell you where this all came from. I don't want to sound too metaphysical here, but the entire plot just landed in my head. I just thought about it, and I said, my goodness, I don't know exactly where this came from, but I think it'll work. Because like Wendy, I had been doing a type of writing that I actually thought was not the best use of my writing skills. I mean, I enjoyed writing the other 12 novels that I've written so far, but I'd always been intrigued by murder mysteries. I've read everything Agatha Christie ever wrote. And I read an article once that said she would take a bubble bath and plot out all our mysteries. Well, I didn't plot this in the bubble bath, but I thought to myself back then, my goodness, that must take a lot to work out all these things, because mystery writing is so very different from any other type of writing. When you're doing, let's just say, mainstream fiction, and it's a character study, you can be somewhat loose with the narrative, but you can't waste anything in murder mysteries because everything has to make sense. And if you mislead the reader, they'll catch you. They'll say, well, wait a minute, that couldn't have happened that way because you said she was this and that. So it's a very disciplined, tight sort of writing. And you have to go back and check yourself over and over again to make sure that you haven't left any loopholes in your plot. So anyway, I'm glad that, like Wendy, I decided to switch genres and take on something that I think is my niche.
I wasn't sure exactly which one of these ladies had been murdered and why either, because none of them are likable. Even their children don't like them. You know, Hannah has the lover muscle guy. Where did you come up with his name?
Well, you're talking about Hannah Lewis.
Right.
We have four gin girls, Liddy Langston Rose, Hannah Lewis, Cicely Groves, and Bethany Morrissey. So make of all those names what you will, but you are referring to Hannah Lewis, who is very athletic. She plays tennis doubles at the Rosalie Country Club, and she takes no prisoners. And she is hooked up with this personal trainer who has told everyone that his name is Hermes Caliban. Of course, they know that's ridiculous. That's not his name. But he's a muscle guy. He's a steroid muscle guy. And the gin girls at Bridge Games try to press Hannah and find out, well, what's really going on beside jumping jacks? But she won't tell. She's not kissing and telling. So the other thing is that Hannah is giving him largesse because of whatever services he's rendering. She gives him a condo. She gives him an SUV. And she has two very, very lazy, divorced, forever bachelors, on the prowl sons who believe that she is frittering their inheritance away on this man. So you're right. They seem to have a motivation to stop their mother from continuing this lifestyle. So there's that. And those two boys, Beau and Charlie Lewis, are not likable either any more than the gardener Arden Wilson is. There's so many unlikable people, except the two most likable people are Wendy herself. And Merlise is very likable, even though she stirred the sugar into the coffee. She served it, and her fingerprints and her DNA are all over everything. And the witness to all of this is the yard man, Arden Wilson, who does not like her. So, as you say, Wendy wants to try to clear her, but all the evidence points to her, while you have this enormous backlog of characters who could have done it for—
And for lots of reasons.
For lots of reasons that are obvious, but they can't find any DNA or prints or any other evidence. They all have alibis. They weren't there the day of the poisonings. The only two people in the house, beside the four gin girls, were the yard man and the cook housekeeper. So there you have this puzzle. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that Marlise does get arrested and put in jail as the perpetrator.
And her son really has a problem with that and actually comes back to Rosalie to try to help his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily in a good way, but, you know, again, that would be a spoiler to talk about that.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, at least the son does come back to try to help his mother,
right.
Which
Hiram,
is good.
Hiram is someone that he's a bad boy, but he and his mother have a relationship that is stronger than what he's done and what she's accused of doing. If you want to know something, my editor, John Scotamilio at Kensington, loves Merlise. And I hadn't even thought of making her a continuing character in the series. But he said, you have to have Merlise back.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. So is Wendy going to continue in the series, or is it going to be a completely new cast of characters?
No. It's going to be some continuing cast of characters. It's a murder mystery series with a connection to the game of bridge, because the series has a subtitle, A Bridge to Death Mystery, pun intended. And Wendy will continue. Her boyfriend Ross will continue. Her father, Bax, will continue. Merlise will continue. And there will be a few others from the first novel, but there will be brand new murders, brand new suspects, so that the challenge is completely different for Wendy. At this point, we have a two-novel contract. I've written the second one already. It's in New York. We stay like 2 years ahead in New York. The second one is called Playing the Devil. It's very interesting, but very different from Grand Slam Murders.
Now, I noticed that in your acknowledgement, you said this is the most research you've ever done for a book.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that?
It had a lot to do with things like how poisons work, what police procedures were specifically, interviewing suspects, how long that took, how long a crime scene remained intact so that people couldn't enter it. I actually needed to know the sort of logistical timing that you see and take for granted on a show like CSI. At the same time, I did not want to bog the novel down in those kind of forensics, like so-and-so was in the lab all day and found out this. You shove that in the background because this is the type of mystery where the heroine, Wendy Winchester, being an amateur sleuth, relies upon her brain. And in that sense, that's kind of a throwback to the Agatha Christie concept mm-hmm. of a woman or a man, Hercule Poirot or Miss Marple or whoever, solving it through putting certain clues together And back then, of course, you really didn't have a lot of forensics. But even today, there are still people that have all the forensic evidence in front of them, and they still can't exactly pin down who did it, when they did it, why they did it. So your challenge as a mystery writer is to build up a case and then completely fool your reader. And only one person so far, being my brother, says they've figured it out. And I'm still not sure whether he's telling the truth or not. But everybody,
well, he is your brother.
He's
so,
my brother.
Yeah.
So there was a sibling thing going. I'm determined to figure out his plot here. He says he at a certain point he figured it out. If he did, he's rather brilliant and will have to tap into his brain for some more ideas.
But you've gotten great reviews on this book. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about that before we actually started the interview. Why do you think the reviews have been so much better this time, or why are you more happy, I guess, about the reviews?
Well, I have gotten good reviews on selected books before, but I've never gotten three so early from the major journal reviews. I might have gotten one from Library Journal before or Booklist, but first came through Kirkus Reviews. They were the first. Then Booklist, then Publishers Weekly. And all three of them started using puns saying, Lee, R.J. Lee, deals a winning hand. And I'm very happy because I thought that this was the best writing that I had ever done. And that I was, like Wendy, putting my skills to their best use. For years, I seemed to have resisted writing mysteries because I didn't know if I could do it well. So I finally faced my fears and said, doggone it, I'm going to try it. So I'm very, very pleased that the National Review Journals have lauded it so much. I'm also pleased with the fact that Kensington gave it a special cover. It has a bit of humor in it, if you can call four ladies at a bridge table looking like they've just been poisoned humorous. I can't describe it, but it does have a very unique look to it, Grand Slam Murders, and you have these. They're not exactly cartoonish, but they're not Photoshopped people.
So. But it does give you an idea about their personalities. You do describe the ladies in the book, mm-hmm. and I just like the bright colors.
Yes.
I think it makes it very marketable.
Well, we're thinking that people who are just browsing in a bookstore or in a library check something out will be attracted to it and say, well, this looks like it'll be a fun read. So I'm very pleased with the great start that we have. The release date is January 29th, so we're not too far away from it at this point.
But you've already got number two in New York.
It's in New York right now.
Wow. So will it be a year from now when it comes
yes,
out, you
it'll
hope?
Yes, it'll be okay. January 2020. Some people find it incredible that we have to stay that far ahead, but that's the way the New York publishing industry works. You go to contract, as it's called. You fulfill your contract, and then based on your success and your sales, the editor makes the decision about whether you should go back to contract with more books. In a series, for instance, I might be offered another two-book contract or more than that if it's very successful. But that's how it works. You have to get maybe to a John Grisham level before you get something like a 6 or 7 novel contract, and there's one a year or one even every 6 months. So it's a demanding sort of profession, but I love the fact that we have deadlines because that makes you focus even more.
We've reached the end of our time for today's book talk. I've been speaking with R.J. Lee, the author of Grand Slam Murders. The book is the first of the new A Bridge to Death mystery series published by Kensington. I'm Linda Lloyd, and this is Book Talk.
Thank you for joining us today. Book Talk is recorded in the studios of WIPL in Memphis, Tennessee. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at WIPLFM@gmail.com or write to us at Book Talk, care of WIPL, 3030 Poplar Avenue, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111, or call us at 901-415-2752.
This recording of Book Talk is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license for the United States. You are free to share, copy, distribute, or display and perform this work, but there are restrictions. Nothing in this license impairs or restricts WYPL's moral rights. Thank you for listening to Book Talk.